It is my pleasure to introduce to you John Henry Weston, whose name has become synonymous with pro-life news. He is the co-founder and editor-in-chief of LifeSiteNews.com, the most indispensable pro-life news resource. LifeSite News has become the largest, most comprehensive, and reliable sources of information on the dignity of human life. John Henry Weston is also the co-founder of Voices of the Family, an influential worldwide coalition of pro-life and pro-family groups, which defend life and family in the media. His topic, a full-spectrum look at the culture of life from a worldwide news outlet perspective.
It is a great blessing and privilege to be here with you. I want to thank Molly and all the organizers. If you wouldn't mind right now with me, we'll just bow for a word of prayer. Eternal Father, in the most holy name of Jesus, by the infinite merits of his most precious blood, we beg thee to send us thy Holy Spirit, that we might know and do thy will in all things, that they might hear your words. We ask this all in your most holy name, O Jesus. Amen. LifeSite News has been around now almost 20 years. And, we seem to be charting the decline and fall of civilization. And I say that because it's true. You ever see those of you who are somewhere around my age, which is now 45 or coming there too, remember National Geographic during the 70s? They were famous for finding those far-off cultures that still didn't have civilization. And they were famous for those magazines because the women were topless and stuff. There were also painted bodies and the big ear-piercing things that the lobes hung down to there and the lip things like that. And it was very visually stimulating, I guess you could say. A lot of men or boys, young boys, would look at that and say, wow, for all sorts of reasons. But it was a depiction of uncivilized nations or places where civilization hadn't yet hit. They definitely didn't have the internet. But what is that depiction but what we actually have today? If you haven't noticed yet, in Toronto, we passed legislation in Ontario legalizing women's toplessness. We also have, of course, these massive tattoo parlors, so much so that almost everyone has a tattoo, and we have piercings everywhere. And believe it or not, we now have those kind of piercings that extend your earlobe and your lip. So we've come right back to an uncivilized place. It's not only that. Do you remember, when the Americas civilization came to Americas, what did they find? They found child sacrifice. They found mass graves, still today proving, by the way, if anybody says it's an imagination, you just look at the history. They found mass graves of infants who were sacrificed, who were torn apart limb from limb, who were thrown down the ziggurats. And, we think we're so civilized and we're beyond all that. You know how many children were sacrificed, it's estimated? Back in the Aztec days? 1 in 5. And you know what's really amazing? Think about our own statistics. About 4 million live births a year in America and 1 million abortions. 1 in 5. We have reached a non-civilized, pre-Christian, now post-Christian, I guess you could say, culture. It's exactly where we're at. And LifeSite News, of course, is an international service. So what are we at? Yearly, according to Guttmacher Institute, of course, the Planned Parenthood arm of information, 44 million induced abortions every year. And that does not include the chemical abortions that happen through contraception, which is practiced by approximately 63% of women in the world. If you add those numbers, we have more deaths every year worldwide than all of the Second World War throughout all its many years. So we have come to a point of post-Christian society in a massive way. But it's not all bad. LifeSite News really does try to find the positive stories, and that comes largely thanks to many of the beautiful pro-life leaders who are here today. We report every year on the March for Life. Down in D.C., it's absolutely incredible. All of you hopefully have been to the March for Life. Who has been to the March for Life in D.C.? Awesome. Good to see many of you. Any of you who haven't, you have to go. We force all of our new reporters every year to go to the March for Life, and they go down and they experience this the most unbelievable thing. You feel insulated sometimes as someone who supports life, family, faith, and freedom. You feel like sometimes, am I the only one in the world? I'm the only one in my parish or my church, and no one else seems to be wanting to do this like crazy. And then you go to the March for Life and you think, oh my gosh, look at all these people, and they're all young people. And you feel buoyed, you feel supported once again. And it's not only there. The beauty is America's March for Life has spawned marches for life all around the world. Canada, I'm happy to say my native land, was the first one actually to take you up on this. And so we've been running a March for Life for years in Canada now. But it's not only Canada. Far-flung places like India have a March for Life as well. And you know, we were told at LifeSite News now 4 years ago, there was a 17-year-old girl in Romania who wrote to us to say, hey, I read about your coverage on the March for Life, and we'd like to start one in Romania. That 17-year-old girl now is 21 or 22 years old. Last year, she came to a Rome conference that LifeSite News put on and is now run by Voice of the Family, the group we co-founded with John Smeaton, who's right there in the middle of the room. And that Romanian girl came and told us last year that she started the March for Life then 4 years ago, and last year had it running in 25 Romanian cities. This beauty of this positive demonstration for life, this celebration for life to mark a horrific anniversary of the forcing of abortion on America through the courts is one which has transformed the globe literally. And it's not only the March for Life, you've also got 40 Days for Life. You know, the pro-life movement has gone through a bit of a metamorphosis. Many of you in the room will remember the days, the early days, when we decided to say, hey, we want to be available and open to everybody. So we want to definitely make sure we never mention Jesus or God in anything we do. How well did that work out for us? Not very well. But what has come of what I like to call full disclosure? So you meet the people and you tell them, hey, you might not believe in God. That's okay. I just want to let you know where we're coming from. We do believe in heaven and in hell, and we want the best for you. So the best for you is this, and we're coming at it from an altruistic perspective. Now, we can talk about everything else. I just want full disclosure, you to know. Because you know what? When they're on the other side, and you say, we don't talk about God at all of them go, yeah, sure. We don't believe you at all. I was on the other side. I should know. And when you look at the stats, where is the life and family support? It's always among the religious. Look at every single study. You'll find it's always among the religious. The more religious, the more support. Very interestingly, too, you have a real confirmation of things that they can change, and it does work. The rhetoric of the other side is absolutely horrible. But you have, from the converts, the truth. Bernard Nathanson, of course, founded the National Abortion Rights Action League. He was an abortion doctor supreme, one of the ones who brought it here and kept it here for many, many years. Upon his conversion, he said some interesting things. And one of the most important things he said was that they made up the numbers on maternal death. They actually just made them up. Maternal death, of course, is the sort of proof in the pudding, the proof, in quotes, in the pudding of, well, if we don't have it legal, they're going to have back alley coat hanger abortions. And that's why you see the coat hangers. Many youth in the pro-life movement today have no idea. What the heck is the coat hanger thing about? But anyway, it's about the falsehood that if it's not legal, it'll happen unsafely and there will be many, many deaths. We've proved it wrong. There are cultures that have gone from a pro-abortion culture to legalized protection for life. We have that in Poland, and we have it in Chile and other countries as well. But Poland and Chile are interesting because you watched the conversion. In Poland, it happened, of course, they were under communism and had abortion that way, went to a place where they have almost no abortion now, legalizing protection for life. In Chile, the same thing. There's a recent article in the last couple of years about Chile, about Malta, and about Ireland, about maternal deaths in those countries, because, of course, Chile was a major experiment, because here you watched a nation go from legalized abortion to legalized protection for life, and guess what? Maternal deaths plummeted. Do you know that in Malta, in Chile, and in Ireland, where abortion is illegal, they have lower maternal death rates than the United States of America? Go figure. Guess what? Truth works, and it's on our side. So there is beauty to report on life, on family issues. We have very beautiful things. We try and make available the best arguments on life, faith, family, and freedom so that people can go out and evangelize these truths. That's our mission at LifeSite News, to educate and to activate. We provide the best answers for the hardest questions. We provide for when they have the hardest question on abortion, rape, and incest. We provide you with Rebecca Kiesling, Save the One. All the beautiful mums who now stand up and say, like Liana Rebolledo, who I was privileged to interview at the March for Life just recently, who will say publicly, I was raped. She's raped brutally by two men. She still has the scars on her face. She was raped when she was 12. She bore her child to life, and that child meant the world to her. And she told me at the end of the interview, she said, if I had to do it again, I would for my child. These are powerful answers to the hardest of questions. But there's lots of bad to report. Unfortunately, we are reporting on the decline and fall of civilization. So there is overwhelming bad to report. But you know what? Even in the bad, there's something very interesting. The bad is actually an affirmation of everything. It's the hugest I told you so that you've ever seen. Youth are characteristically accepting of ideas, of concepts. They're idealistic. So I remember as a young person, even when I started into the pro-life movement, accepting the arguments of the other side, because they're made with conviction. When same-sex unions were introduced into Canada, it was introduced under the guise that this will stop the movement for same-sex marriage, because it will give them what they want. We believe that in some ways. And there was people who warned, oh no, it's guaranteed, it's just for the next step, it's going to come. And you're idealistic, so you want to say, no, come on, that's not really going to go there. How many people actually believed that if we opened our culture to abortion, we would get to assisted suicide and euthanasia? Didn't some of us actually go, oh come on, don't stretch it so much? And yet, that's exactly what has happened. Year after year, if you follow it, it exactly progresses down the line that we were all warned about. The prophetic nature of the movement for life and family is truly amazing. And I'm going to take three snapshots of prophecies, if you will. And one from as early as 1917, which really is a miraculous one. One from 1968. And one from 1983. In 1917, there was a miracle. There was the miracle of the sun in Fatima, Portugal, which many of you have probably heard about. It's in the newspapers in Portugal, if you don't believe it. It's very evidence-based. The sun danced in the sky. Everybody thought they were going to die. It was pouring rain. When it stopped, it was all dry. You can believe it or not, but it's recorded in newspapers everywhere. Apparently what happened was Mary, the mother of Jesus, appeared to three little children and had some interesting messages for them. One was, remember 1917, one was, fashions will be introduced that will offend my son very much. Remember, what do we always say? Don't go there, because what's going to happen is it's going to progress. But no one ever believed, what do we say? It's going to progress into nudity and pornography, into hardcore, and eventually into like all the weirdest things you can imagine. And we all said, Come on, just lighten up. Even when the Amelis fashions were there, it started with Playboy. And what was Playboy? Playboy back then was nothing but the Sports Illustrated version, which we all don't even call pornography anymore. And then it went to Playboy, which now we call soft porn. And then it went to harder things. And then it went to movies. And now, guess what? America mainstream movie, 50 Shades, 100 million of the books sold, and box office smash of what? Seriously? Yes, glorified abuse of sexuality. Did we ever think we'd get there? No, but we did. And pedophilia is coming next. Oh, I should call it intergenerational sex, of course. But this is the thing. Things do progress. It is real. And who, if someone told you even 10 years ago, in 10 years there's going to be a big box office smash hit about a porn film glorifying violence, sexual violence against women, you all would have gone, ha, come on, guys, we're a feminist country. We're never going to do that. Oh, yes, we will. And yes, we just did. Another prediction. 1968, many of you will recall Humanae Vitae. Humanae Vitae, On Human Life, was the encyclical of Pope Paul VI. It was very controversial. A year before, they were wondering, they had a they had a council out in the church questioning, should we go for contraception, basically? You had Margaret Sanger out banging the drums for that, eugenicist that she was. But it was a real struggle. Should we go for this? It seems like the cultural zeitgeist for sure wants to go there. Majority report actually came back and said, yes, we should go for it. Minority report written by some weird Polish bishop said, no, you shouldn't. That Polish bishop, of course, became John Paul II. But this was long before. This is 1968. And that was released in July of 1968. All around the world, there was rejection of it. Not by just pew sitters, by bishops. July of 68, in September of 68, the Canadian Conference of Catholic Bishops came out with a document rejecting Humanae Vitae. In a very polite and nice way, they said, if you've tried it and your conscience is okay with it, then it's okay. The Winnipeg Statement, which, by the way, still exists today and has never been repealed in Canada. Nonetheless, in Humanae Vitae, Pope Paul VI made some amazing predictions. Amazing predictions about what would happen if we uncoupled sex from procreation. If we let go of that link between the marital union and life, what would happen? He talked about objectification of women and even about imposition by governments on families' freedom to procreate. And of course, that sounded insane. So that same reaction, oh, come on, don't go overboard. Why do they always have to go overboard? Can't they just say what it is without becoming, like, resorting to hyperbole? Don't they know that makes them seem insane? And yet, what did we see? We saw that, we look back on 1968 now like he had a crystal ball. We have witnessed China's horrific one-child policy. We have witnessed forced contraception, forced abortion. We have witnessed that the UN pressure, under pain of not receiving financial and food aid to African nations, that they institute contraception policies, that they allow for sterilization. And it's not all outside. Do you know that in 1990 there was a document declassified in the United States called NSSM 200? It was a Kissinger memo that was turned into international law here in the United States. It was about U.S. supremacy. Go look it up. It's still there. It was declassified, as I said, in the 90s. And it targeted 13 countries because their populations were large and growing. And they had the natural resources to be able to achieve supremacy over the United States. So it became an issue of military, even, importance. And what was the plan, which is detailed in NSSM 200? To convince those nations to contracept and limit their populations under the guise that that would be good for them. And this population control policy of deception was actually implemented. And it led to and encouraged the financial inducements or punishments that went along with what we now have. Amazing predictions from 1968. And then there was, in 1983, Francis Schaeffer. Many of you will know Francis Schaeffer. In 1983, he wrote a book in which he predicted that the anti-life culture would lead to assisted suicide and euthanasia. And again, everybody said, come on. Life in the womb, yes, okay, we're devaluing life, but we're never going to get to a point of euthanasia. Really? Why do they have to be so extreme? And yet, what do we have? We have assisted suicide and euthanasia, not only breathing down our throats, but as Alex Schadenberg, who's here at the Euthanasia Prevention Coalition table out there, will tell you, we just had it imposed on us in Canada through the courts. So all of these predictions have come startlingly true. And this is, in all honesty, this is a morality that is going on. It's an anti-Christian morality that is shouted from every rooftop, in every sphere, everywhere around the world. This theology comes at you from TV, from your laptop, from your phone, and from every single politician in power in most of the developed world. You hear this new anti-Christian, anti-life, anti-family theology. At the same time when we have deafening silence for 50 years from the Christian pulpits. And if you want one reason why we have the culture of death, more than any other reason, it's because the silence of the pulpits of the Christian teachers who should have voiced the truth of Christ. Thank God for President Obama, because with the HHS mandate, we had for the first time preaching on contraception in the last 50 years. Some priests now believe, and pastors now believe, it's okay to preach out about problems with contraception because of the HHS mandate. But you might be saying to yourself, wait a minute, we're hearing a lot of talk about gay marriage today, and even from the pulpits. Are you hearing it? And that's a good question. Because the answer is no. I'm going to tell you why that answer is no. Because we have this problem, same-sex marriage. It's one of the hardest ones we've ever dealt with. And it's really tough to deal with, so much so that nobody wants to talk about it. I'm comfortable talking about it because I come from a place of sexual dysfunction and have been given a lot of grace and a knowledge of the beauty of life when you act within God's plan for human sexuality. And I mean only good and well for those not doing that, whether they're into pornography or adultery or homosexuality or any of the other sexual aberrations out there. Our motivation has to be love for them. If it's not, get out of the field and just pray. If it is, go out and speak and act and love them. Because that's what it's about. It's about saving their souls and loving them. So why aren't we hearing the preaching from the pulpits? It's very interesting. As I said, LifeSite News has followed this all around the world for 18 years. And we saw something very definite. I was on all the lists of all the pro-same-sex marriage or pro-homosexual at the time activists. And way back in the early 90s, they were not talking about same-sex marriage. And when they started to, many of the activists themselves said, what the heck are we doing this for? We want nothing to do with marriage. We're not monogamous. Are you insane? What do we have to do with one-on-one? We're not about one-on-one at all. What are we doing this for? The leaders among the activists, though, said, no, we need this. It's a societal stamp of approval. And you know what that's about? It's about the behavior. Essentially, internally, it's about the conscience. Whenever we sin, our conscience bugs us. And it's an amazing thing what you will do to shut that up. When I fell into a life of sin, one of the first things I did was take off my scapular. My dad was a very holy guy. He gave me a scapular when I was probably a baby. I wore it forever. And you know when you wear something, you never feel it. When I got into a life of sin, though, it was always, I'm itchy. What is that? Oh, ugh. After a few times of that, ugh, I took it off. I couldn't stand it. Because when your conscience bothers you, you must either change your life or do something to quell or shut up your conscience. And if that means shutting up other people, then you'll do that too. Why do you think large families are so bothered? You have 8 kids? My gosh, don't you know what you're doing to the planet? Even when they try to be more friendly, don't you know what causes that? And I always come back with, yes, and my wife and I have decided to keep our toothbrushes now in separate glasses. But the thing is, we have to be able to... Wow, now I lost my train of thought. Oh, yeah. See, get me off on the sex thing. It's all weird. We have to be able to provide truth. We have to be able to speak the truth in love. Now, what we have with the homosexual movement, what we have with the non-preaching, we have the arguments to give that are love. The most powerful argument on the other side today is this one. If these two guys love each other, how come they can't get married? I love my same-sex partner. You're saying we can't be married. You're against love. I thought you said your God was love. Why are you against love? What are the typical answers given on this issue, even by clergy, but by almost everybody who talks on this issue? 2 answers, the ones that have been field-tested, as it were. Number 1 and most successful, every child deserves a mother and a father. 2nd answer, it's an institution that existed before the state. We have no right to change it. Good arguments. They are good arguments, especially the one about a mother and child. But we did something in the pro-life movement. Remember, we had a metamorphosis in the pro-life movement. We went from rights of the child, rights of the child, rights of the child, to a place where people were saying, yeah, but what about the woman? You don't care about the woman. You just care about unborn children. You don't care about born people. You only care about... And what did we do? We came up with the women who themselves had abortions. And they are now silent no more. We showed that abortion is terrible for women, that women deserve better than abortion, that abortion is another trauma, and she's already been raped. Why would we want to put her through the second trauma of abortion? We were able to provide that answer to the life culture. We need to do the same with marriage. We need to come up with an answer that speaks love to love, because if you can't say, we love you, you lose the argument because you lose love. And there is a way to say it. It's the old way. It's the uncomfortable way. It's talking about sexuality. Because remember, if you look in the teachings of the Catholic Church, of the Evangelical Church, on these issues, they don't talk about marriage. They talk about what the issue is. Homosexuality. Homosexual acts, in fact. Never been about hating gays. In fact, it's been about loving those who are same-sex attracted. Whoa, now what are we doing? We're telling them that that behavior harms you. It harms your body. Some people are willing to deny that it harms your body. As weird as that might seem. And this is why I love LifeSite News. We're a resource for you. And I'm going to read you a quote. I'm going to read you a quote from leading gay activist in Canada. We passed same-sex marriage, as I said, in 2005. And so anybody who says to me, I don't believe you, and then I start quoting the studies, there's many studies to show the harmfulness of same-sex activity, both in the male and female same-sex population, and they say, all the studies are biased, I don't believe them. I say, fine, don't believe me, don't believe the studies, believe the activists. And then I read them this. Jens Hellquist was leader of the Canadian Rainbow Health Coalition. And this is a speech he gave to Parliament in 2006 asking for more healthcare dollars for the LGBT community in Canada. And here are his words quoted verbatim in the leading gay newspaper of the country and then repeated on LifeSite News, where you can still find it today. Used, by the way, throughout the world in the movement for life, in courts everywhere. Because when it happened, we put it out there, and activists for life and for family can use LifeSite News as a resource. But here's Jens Hellquist. We have one of the poorest health statuses in this country. Health issues affecting queer Canadians include lower life expectancy than the average Canadian, suicide, higher rates of substance abuse, depression, inadequate access to care, and HIV/AIDS. He said, there are all kinds of health issues that are endemic to our community. We have higher rates of anal cancer in the gay male community. Lesbians have higher rates of breast cancer, and so on. And I want to read you his conclusion. His conclusion, verbatim, is one of the most powerful things you will ever hear. He said, now that we can get married, everyone assumes that we don't have any issues anymore. A lot of the deaths that occur in our community are hidden. We don't see them. But those of us working on the front line see them, and I'm tired of watching my community die. This, my brothers and sisters, is a movement about love. Love for our, yes, our brothers and sisters who are same-sex attracted and living those lifestyles, to be willing to endure the scorn of society, calling you a hater and a bigot, for your willingness to tell them, I love you enough to tell you that this behavior harms you. And full disclosure, I'm a Christian, and I believe it's bad for your soul, and I want you in eternal happiness in heaven with God and not somewhere else for all eternity. I know you don't believe that, but I'm coming at this from an altruistic perspective. We have these resources available. We have this information available to use for you to educate and to activate. I want the pro-life movement, the pro-family movement, to take up lobbying, not lobbying of politicians. Lobbying of your pastors and priests and bishops to reawaken the pulpits to the truth. We need this big time. Very quickly, an aside, how to do it and how not to do it. Pastor, you're going to roast in hell if you don't start proclaiming the truth, because you're just a coward and a chicken. Not the right way. I have the right way from a mom who told me, it was really effective. You know, all I did was, my son came home from high school one day, and he's at a Catholic school, but they brought in this gay guy, and he was explaining about how great it was. And I went to my pastor and said, Pastor, I'm hoping you can help me out. My son came home from school today, and he was talking about how it's wonderful to be gay, and we have to be accepting and inclusive. I had no idea what to tell him. Can you help us out? Pastor sort of hummed and hawed and shooed her away, and next Sunday's homily was a beautiful homily on the issue. There's a way to do this. To call on their fatherly prerogative to help and assist us. And we should pray and fast for them as well. No one wants to walk into the lion's den, but we're calling them to. But it's got to be done. If you want to lobby, start first with your priests and pastors and bishops. Conversion, by the way, is possible. A few years ago now, believe it or not, Rick Warren was starting to go soft on the gay issue. I don't know if anybody remembers that, but he was on national television. They asked him the question. And I said, you know, that's not even my issue. And I called him out, and others called him out. Pastor friends of his called him out. A little while later, we got a call in our offices. I wasn't able to be there to talk to him, but he called to talk to us because I said that, like Peter, Rick Warren has betrayed Christ. He's called to be a leader in the church, just like Peter was. But he has denied Christ in his truth. And if you know Rick Warren today, he's come back strong on the side of the family, being willing to proclaim the truth of Jesus Christ. We have got, though, other spiritual leaders in our nation who are really well-meaning guys who need to be lobbied this way. And what way? Asking them as our fathers and praying and fasting for them. We have a particular leader who I'm going to mention because I think he's a great guy and I think he has the potential to be an amazing leader in the church. He's the Cardinal of New York City. Cardinal Dolan is a very good man. If you listen to Cardinal Dolan's talks and homilies, you'll be incredibly impressed. Except Cardinal Dolan is falling down on this issue, just like Rick Warren did. When Michael Sam, the football player, came out and said he was gay, and he was there with his partner, and they're living together, Cardinal Dolan heard it, and he said, "Bravo!" Because no one wants to look the bad guy. No one wants to look like they're hating gays and lesbians. But he said, "Bravo!" And that was a wrong message. When the St. Patrick's Day Parade in New York City allowed, for the first time in over 250 years, a gay group to march under their banner, Cardinal Dolan was also asked this year to be the Grand Marshal of the parade. And he said it was a good decision, under the guise that the group apparently told him, or he was assured that this group was nothing other than gay Catholics. Go look at NBC Out Universal. They're a gay activist group under every stripe. If you go to their Twitter page, you'll be really offended by all the same-sex kissing you see on the page and the glorification of same-sex marriage. This is a group very much on the other side. And Cardinal Dolan needs to, out of love for those who are same-sex attracted, do one of the hardest things. Step down from being Grand Marshal and have a real St. Patrick's Day celebration with Catholics. And now I want to get to some of the scariest things I've seen. One of the scariest things is ISIS. ISIS is scary for everybody today. But how in the world does ISIS relate to our issues? Oh, it does. I don't know if you know anything about cults, but the way cults work is the way Satan works. He doesn't go with all falsehood. Think of the Garden of Eden, even, the example where we see Satan in action most clearly. What do you see? He doesn't say all lies. He says a lot of truth mixed with lies. And it all sounds good. If you eat of this tree, you'll have the knowledge of good and evil. Was that true? Yes, it was. But what he didn't tell you is it would bring you death. ISIS does the same thing. Remember, the truths that we have on life and family are true in the realest sense of the word. They're not only true ostensibly, they're also written in our souls. Natural law is a real thing, even though it's never talked about. It didn't evaporate because we don't talk about it anymore. It's still stamped in us. So the truth is there. It will resonate in the human soul. And guess what ISIS can do? They can point to our anti-life, to our anti-family culture, and say, "See the demon." What do you think they call the U.S. the great Satan? Porn, abortion, and homosexual lifestyle. You don't believe me? Listen to this quote. This is John McGuire. John McGuire was one of the recruits. A Canadian boy. He was a teenager. Really sort of a star in Canada. He was doing well, good at school, liked in school. He lived in Kempville, Ontario. He's Caucasian with kind of reddish hair. If I did that, people would suspect he was, that way anyway. But no, this is a white guy. And on his Facebook account, here's what he said when what he was writing about. He said, "Evil is very prominent in Canadian culture. Homosexuality, fornication, and adultery are generally accepted. Drugs and alcohol are easily accessible and widely accepted as being normal. Women and men are often not properly covered. Music is widespread in public places." Oh. They're using the truth to draw these youth into this cult. And that is now threatening the world. one of the scariest things I've seen. But another and much more scary thing is what is going on today in the church. There is, probably more than ever before, an active movement to take on the Catholic Church. The Catholic Church has been the last man standing in many respects on life and family. At the United Nations, they are sometimes the only nation, if you want to call it that, that's still standing up for life and for family in these hardest of issues. We saw it all through the pontificate of John Paul II and Pope Benedict. But now there's a concerted effort, and not only effort, some even success in getting to the Catholic Church. What's happened and what's happening right now, for instance, in Germany, under the leadership of Cardinal Kasper, and most distressingly, Cardinal Marx, who is on the Council of Nine, advisors to Pope Francis, is this movement for divorce remarried communion. They're talking about going directly against what Christ himself said in the scriptures. Remember, Jesus in the scriptures doesn't talk much at all about homosexuality or about abortion, but he was very crystal clear on divorce and the idea of it. He talked about how what man is united, let no man put asunder. He talked about how even if you abandon your wife and you are with another woman, you commit adultery against your wife if you separate. Same for the husband. And so he was crystal clear that this is an impossibility. The Catholic Church doesn't have Catholic divorce. Annulment has nothing to do with divorce. Annulment means the marriage contract in the first place wasn't valid because there was either no freedom going in or misrepresentation going on or what have you, but the original marriage wasn't real. There is no such thing as divorce. But this idea of accepting it now will open the door to anything. Because if you can go against the words of Christ so very clearly laid out, you will then be able to contravene anything on these teachings. So it's one of the scariest things I've ever seen. There has been already bad advice given to the Holy Father. He's even said what his bad advice has been. And I hate to say that, but we're a news reporting agency. We report what's out there, and we work always from transcripts, never from what the mainstream media says. And if you read the transcript on his trip back from Rio de Janeiro, there's an interesting thing. I don't know if you know the way it works on the planes. There's reporters from every nationality, and they're in country groups. They're in language groups, and they don't all get to ask questions of the Holy Father. So they have to come up with the questions in little groups, but special place is always given to the reporters from the country where he's in. And so the reporter from Rio de Janeiro, who was there from Brazil, was given a special place. And the Holy Father had just come from there and was returning on the plane. And she said, "Holy Father, you didn't mention abortion and same-sex marriage while you were there. And Brazil had just passed legislation on these issues." And the Holy Father responded, "Well, we have to be positive. We have to really present a positive face." And then she asked a follow-up question. She said, "But Holy Father, the youth are interested in this stuff." And he responded, "But don't we also have to put a positive face on it? And the teaching of the church on these things are known. They're well known." And then she asked a third follow-up question, and it was, "Holy Father, may I then ask your position on those issues?" And the answer was, "I am a son of the church." The first two questions led to the responses to the first two questions led to the third. Because when we're not willing to speak it, when we're not willing to say it, when there's silence from the pulpits, it makes people question where we're coming from. We had his interview where that probably the most shocking thing I've ever read in my life was the interview where the Holy Father talked about how we need to talk about other things. We can't speak about abortion, contraception, and same-sex marriage all the time. That, to me, was one of the most shocking statements I'd ever heard. I immediately raced to find out, in Argentina, they must be preaching on life, faith, and contraception from every pulpit, because where has that been? That's just weird. In all of the West, it's never been done. Maybe somewhere in Africa, and obviously in Argentina, where he came from, they've been doing that all the time. Because, gosh, it's not here. How many of you, before the HHS mandate, heard a homily on contraception? And you, sir, go to probably one of the holiest parishes around, because it's impossible. It's unbelievable. Since the 60s, when have we heard this? Almost never. And even, I'm talking from the holy guys. So that was weird. Where is this information coming from? Unfortunately, there is a cadre, a group around the Holy Father that are known to be, well, the same kind of folks who would say, enough of that already. We need to talk about other things. So there is a necessity today to pray for the Pope and for spiritual leaders like never before in modern history. Pray and fast. And that brings me, where are we time-wise? Where is the time back? A couple minutes to wrap it up. And I am wrapping it up. That brings me to the final point, and that is basically our own witness. We have to be able to give witness ourselves. This is the most important truth that there is. Why? Because in the beginning, God created man and woman and put them together to have family. It was actually His own image of the Trinity that He was stamping throughout mankind. He was giving us the Trinitarian relationship forever in every community throughout all time. Catholics should look up, and non-Catholics as well, theology of the body. The fathers of the church, the ancient fathers, talked about this. How father, mother, child are the image of the Trinity. The image of the relationship to which we're called in heaven. If you're Satan, your number one goal is to pull people out of that relationship. Therefore, your number one area of attack is this issue. That's why the whole wide world is fighting on this issue. It's because it's a direct attack on the Trinity. And so we are called to do what we do, what we've been told forever, to fast and to pray, but most importantly, to live out the culture of life. And that means, guys, custody of the eyes. Never heard of. I mean, gosh, if anything, that one went out first, probably back in 1917. But custody of the eyes is, yeah, actually turn away when there's something immodest. And ladies, dress so as not to tempt your brothers. We're called to embrace life, to be open to life, to be welcoming to life. And that includes, for those of us who aren't married, to support large families. And we're called in a special way today to preach these truths that sometimes our spiritual leadership is unwilling to do, but always to do it with love and to promote the faith. And I'm going to close with a quote from one of the United States' most well-known atheists. Our whole goal is caritas in veritate, the truth in love. And I've never seen that more powerfully expressed but by America's best-known atheist, Penn Jillette. In 2008, Penn Jillette said these words, "If you believe that there's a heaven and a hell, and that people could be going to hell or not getting eternal life or whatever, and you think that it's not really worth telling them this because it would make it socially awkward, how much do you have to hate somebody not to proselytize? How much do you have to hate somebody to believe that everlasting life is possible and not tell them that?" God bless you, my friends. Thank you.
Well done. Fantastic. Thank you. Thank you. And thank you for your warm response here. So I got some tough questions and easy questions. What do you want, buddy? What do you want?
Tough.
Oh, you want the tough one. Well, I want the easy one first because I'm... Okay, here we go. Tough question. Do you have any resources on your website about the millions of frozen embryos created as a result of in vitro fertilization?
Absolutely so. Back in 1996, I actually wrote the first article when I think it was in the British Medical Journal. The fact came out that they were going to destroy 6,000 human embryos. And it was at that time that our eyes were really awakened to the massive destruction of life that comes with embryonic stem cell research in vitro fertilization. One is a product of the other. And not only do we have the numbers on the unbelievable amount of deaths, because we have over a million children now born through IVF, and for each child born, there's at least 10 killed, so you're talking tens of millions of children sacrificed. We have explanations that make sense to people, because no one can get, okay, there's little embryos, and we're killing them, and what does that mean? So what we did is I made a demonstration. We had to come up with an example so that you could get it. So here's what I wrote about. We should do it visually. I've done it visually before, and I'll do it visually now. I want you to picture two buildings. In one building, over here, there's a... I'm mic'd, good. There's a childless couple, and they're standing in an open window on the 14th story of a building, and they have sad faces, and they're in front of this open window looking out forlorn and lost. Across the laneway, there's another building, and on top of this building is a scientist in a white lab coat with 20 little babies, all in diapers, and they look cute as anything. And he's going to pick up five babies and chuck them across the lane towards the open window, hoping that one gets into the open window so the childless couple can have a child. And so he does. He picks up five of the babies, chucks them across. They hit the wall, don't make it. They fall to their deaths. But it's okay. He's got 15 more. He tries again. Five more babies. Four die. One makes it in the window. And hurrah! Science has provided life. Science is pro-life because they have a baby thanks to science. But that's the reality of in vitro. With in vitro, they take the ova from the woman after giving her ovarian-stimulating drugs, which are harmful, by the way. They do an operation which, with no dignity at all, puts her in stirrups and gets the ova. They take the sperm from the man, usually with the aid of pornography. This is not the way God intended for children to come into the world. Every child deserves to be conceived in the loving union of a husband and wife. But with this kind of example, we're able to get through to our friends and family, who many of whom have gone for in vitro, what the truth is on this destructive thing. Does that mean the children conceived in this way are not worthy of life? Of course not. But we have to come to grips with the reality of what it is, and we have to ensure that every child is conceived the way they ought to be. They have the right to be.
All right, I'm going to ask a Canadian and American question, okay? Any comments on the 500 years of genocide to the American Indian? Policy, what can we do to undo the wrong?
Well, we have, in any kind of genocide or discrimination, one of the most amazing opportunities. Saul presented on the two Holocausts, on the unspeakable thing. It's funny, I keep forgetting a mic so I can walk around. In the context of the world and the media, everybody says the same thing. First guy to mention Hitler loses. The reason why it's said is because the comparison, as we saw from Saul, is so effective, it's unbelievable. If you know anything about argument, if you're going to lose somewhere, just say that that's off the table. Discrimination, all forms of discrimination are on the table. So discrimination against American Indians, discrimination against black, discrimination against colored folks, whatever, is totally usable in our fight. I remember being at a pro-life conference, kind of like this, and outside there was a whole bunch of girls and guys in their early 20s, late teens, and they were going around the front of the hotel with a horn and blasting out, you know, anti-choice, anti-gay, anti-woman bigots or something. Oh, yes. Christian fascists go away, that kind of thing. So I went out to talk to them because I like doing that kind of thing. I like the hard questions from you guys. I like them from them as well. And there's a woman, the first five guys I asked to speak to me all gave me the same answer. I thought it was a planned answer. I don't speak to that word. Anyway, I thought it was a planned answer because they all gave it so rapid fire. And finally I got to a girl, the fifth person, and I said, you know, I'm from in there. I'm one of the guys who you're protesting against. Would you like to talk? And she said, okay. And I thought, oh, that's cool. So I figured we'd go over to the side, and we did. But then what happened was everybody surrounded us, and a video camera was put right beside my face, and I was like, oh my, what are we into now? And so she started, and she started with, how dare you as a man tell me what I can do with my body? And she said, all into how it's a woman's right to choose, how, you know, this is absolutely horrible, you're a man, you have no idea, you have no right to speak on this, and I let her go on for a few minutes. When it was my turn to speak, I said to her, I am a person of color, and I'm against discrimination. I was discriminated against when I was growing up in school because my skin wasn't white. And from that time on, I fought discrimination based on race. I also fight discrimination based on size and age. And yes, those little kids in the womb are small. But you know what? My son is two, and he's this big. And he doesn't have any less right to life than me because I'm this big. And yes, they're young. But that doesn't give him less of a right to life because he's young. When I stopped speaking, she had tears streaming down her eyes. And she said to me these words, well, would you be willing to take the shirt off your back right now so that a mom could have an unplanned pregnancy? And in my heart, I praised God for that question, because we're all about life and money means nothing. So I said, yeah, I'd give the shirt off my back. I'd give my right arm, because that child in there is my brother and sister, or sister. And you, the mom, means enough to me to sacrifice whatever it takes to help you have your child and not be tormented with abortion. We ended up talking about how we need better social welfare programs and so on and so forth. But we have to use all of these areas of attacks on human dignity to bring out the truth of life.
You have been listening to John Henry Weston, co-founder and editor-in-chief of LifeSiteNews.com.